Manx Radio's update with Christian Jones.
Hello, Faster Mai. Good afternoon. 5 o'clock on Friday, the 28th of November. I'm Christian Jones and this is Update. Welcome in to 30 minutes of all the latest news, sport and travel compiled from the resources of Manx Radio's newsroom. On the way tonight, a high-ranking government official has flagged a year of disruption and cock-ups for the island's digital and e-gaming sector in a move that breaks convention. Meanwhile, three men have been jailed for plotting to import major sums of cocaine hidden in a mini-fridge. And a final decision has been made about the pedestrianisation of Market Square in Castletown. All those stories and more on the way. Get in touch if you want to say hello. Text WhatsApp to 166 177, email to studio@manxradio.com. But first, let's get the latest news headlines read by Siobhan Fletcher. Faster Mai.
A high-ranking government official has described this year as one of disruption, cock-ups and stalled plans for the island's digital and e-gaming sector. Speaking at the Digital Isle of Man conference, Lyle Raxall, the chief executive of the Department for Enterprise's digital agency, said he was frustrated.
I think we need to have an honest discussion around what's the usefulness of that document in its current form, and is that going to provide us with the positive momentum we're looking to leverage moving forward, or do we need to find another way to create the positive momentum that we're looking for?
In response, government says it is committed to supporting legitimate e-gaming operators and maintaining the island's international reputation as a trusted and respected jurisdiction is of the utmost importance. That statement in full is at manxradio.com. Three men from Nottingham have been jailed for their part in a plot to bring cocaine with an estimated street value of £99,000 to the Isle of Man, concealed in a mini-fridge. Castletown Commissioners is looking to introduce an additional vehicle closure to Market Square during the Easter holidays next year. The local authority has published its proposals for the area following a six-week consultation over the summer. And Sophie Ellis-Bextor will be performing on the island next year. She's set to appear at the Villa Marina Royal Hall on Friday, the 24th of July. Further afield, medical experts are not recommending a mandatory NHS screening programme for prostate cancer because they argue it would lead to a high rate of overdiagnosis. Kevin Kibble's facing a terminal prognosis after being diagnosed too late.
If there was a screening programme for men over 50, I would have been picked up years beforehand. We're talking about a £5 blood test here. The arguments about, some people might have difficult issues afterwards. You know, this is a pretty facile argument if it stops people dying from cancer.
Vladimir Zelensky's chief of staff has stepped down following a corruption investigation, and about 200 homes are still without power in the Scottish Highlands and Islands after severe gales overnight. There are your headlines. I'll have your news in full at 6.
Siobhan, thank you. Guramayad, let's take a look at the weather now, brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. Mostly dry this evening and early tonight. Clear spells and a strong south-southwest wind. It'll become less windy overnight and outbreaks of rain are likely to develop towards the end of the night with a minimum temperature of 5 degrees Celsius.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674573 or visit the showroom on the Snugborough Trading Estate.
At Zed's Bedding, we know spills, pets and kids can be tough on mattresses. Our waterproof or quilted protectors shield against everyday mess while adding comfort. Simple, effective mattress protection. Clean, fresh and longer lasting. At Zed's Bedding Ramsey.
If you run a small business or just need more room in the back, Delshaw Vehicles has the perfect van or light commercial for all your needs and can sort out any finance. Based in the Tremode Estate, view filshawvehicles.im or call 49 51 49.
Visit Ramsey Art Gallery for a fabulous range of top brand watches and stunning gold and silver jewellery, gifts for all occasions and of course our gallery of prints and original artworks. Find all this and more at Ramsey Art Gallery Jewellers and Engravers opposite the RNLI shop.
Cork Hill Storage. Call Cork Hill Removals and Storage today. We'll store your goods day after day. Safe and secure around the clock. When it comes to storage, we do the lot. Click CorkHillRemovals.com.
You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
5 past 5 on Manx Radio's Update. Well, as we heard in the news, a high-ranking government official has described this year as one of disruption, cock-ups and stalled plans for the island's digital and e-gaming sector. Lal Raksal, the chief executive of the Department for Enterprise's digital agency, claims the National Risk Appetite Statement was a huge misstep too. He believes his organisation has been fighting the fight, but claims his has faced obstruction from the government and efforts to water down ambitious strategies over fear of detriment to the upcoming Moneyval assessment. Well, let's hear what he had to say first. This is Mr. Raksal speaking at the Digital Isle of Man conference yesterday.
If I was on the side of industry looking in, I think I'd feel it's disingenuous. I absolutely empathise with that. However, from a Digital Isle of Man perspective, we have been fighting the fight for, the entirety of this year. I don't think we've always been listened to the way that we would like to have been listened to. We have made some strides and improvements recently to improve our voice, but we're still outweighed by other voices who are more concerned about risk, reputation, rightly so, because that's important. But I am urging for balance in our communication. As an island, we have done very well in this sector by creating stability, certainty, and having a clear environment that people understood what the rules of engagement were and how to operate. And I think we can all agree that that is no longer the case this year. There's been a high degree of change. That change was participated by King Gaming and the issues we've discovered there, and then exacerbated by an upcoming Moneyval assessment. The National Risk Appetite Statement, which was published I think in May or June, was a huge misstep in my opinion. I think it was nothing more than a cock-up. It was a pretty big one, right? But the lack of engagement on that topic, the way it was rushed out, has been very clearly fed back. And we did this through the eGaming Strategic Advisory Board, where we brought the AML-CFT team in, and they had a pretty torrid time of it, to be honest. And they were left with no uncertainty around the feelings of the industry around that statement.
That's really refreshing, what you've just said there, but nowhere could you see that publicly. So there's been no retraction, there's no apology as far as I'm aware. It would be really helpful if we've made a mistake just to fess up.
I don't disagree with that. I don't think it's going to happen that way.
This is recorded though, right? So any journalists out there?
I do, again, I understand that. I think what has been said is that there will be a all combined risk appetite statement, which would provide an opportunity for amendment to the current wording to be incorporated into a future version. Obviously, we need to make sure we don't make the same mistakes with the future version than there is now, and I will admit that's not been well communicated.
One of the things that Johan mentioned was the e-gaming strategy, which was undertaken probably at great expense and has still not been released. Can we expect that anytime soon?
Yes, maybe. So let me give an update on where we are with the e-gaming strategy. So we kicked off the e-gaming strategy before this time last year. We conducted surveys across industry. We collated that. We understood where the pain points were. We played that back to industry. And we created a strategic document. There were no silver bullets. It wasn't the strongest strategy in the world, but it was a way forward. And from Digital Man's perspective, it was something that we could rally around to say, this is our direction of travel. And it was an opportunity for the government to stand behind that and say, this is a sector that's really important to us. And actually, those are the two real benefits to that document, more so than what was written in there. We had that document written in April, and it's gone through a number of reviews with the Financial Crime Strategic Board. There were some concerns in our messaging that were in that document and how that might play against some of our aspirations around having a successful Moneyval outcome. And as a result, we took quite a number of pieces out of the strategy. We thought we'd achieved a large agreement. And then, yet again, we were faced with an obstruction where there were some uncomfortable statements around the fact that we were having a bit of a sense of ambition. We were talking about new and doing new things, which I feel is important, even in a Moneyvale assessment, to be able to say we've got a way forward. But we then agreed we were going to take the forward-looking part of the plan out, and we changed the title to A Statement of Strategic Intent. In the last review, it's been accepted that the document, which doesn't have much left of it, in all honesty, is appropriate now to publish. And I think we need to have an honest discussion around what's the usefulness of that document in its current form, and is that going to provide us with the positive momentum we're looking to leverage moving forward, or do we need to find another way to create the positive momentum that we're looking for?
Lyle Raxall, the Chief Executive of Digital Isle of Man, speaking there from the Digital Isle of Man conference held yesterday. Well, let's start to unpack some of this. Phil Gorn is Manx Radio's political correspondent. He's also a former infrastructure minister and an environment minister too. Hi, Phil. Thanks for joining us. Firstly, just in response to the comments made, just how significant is it for them to come from a senior government official?
Well, of course, the initial question is he a civil servant or is he sort of slightly external to the civil service? And that's never been entirely clear to me in relation to these various agencies that exist in the Department for Enterprise. But it should come as quite a concern to the Enterprise Minister, because I'm guessing the Enterprise Minister must have had these conversations in private. I can't imagine that someone would have become so frustrated that they felt they had to say all this in public if they hadn't already had those conversations with the minister in private. Certainly, if the conversation hasn't already taken place in private, then I think I'd be quite angry as the minister. But I'd be very surprised if this comes out of the blue.
How unusual is this? I mean, civil servant aside, he's still a member of what is the government. It is very unusual for any high-ranking government official to be making such comments in a public forum, isn't it?
Certainly it is. That said, if these agencies are to be meaningful, they have to be able to speak out. Because effectively the industry needs to believe in the agency. If the agency just trots along and meekly behind whatever government tells it to do, then quite frankly it's probably not serving the industry particularly well. But yes, it's very surprising that it's had to be said in public like this.
Phil Gorner, thank you very much. Well, now, what has the government said in response? Lewis Foster's with me now. Fastamai, Lewis, a busy day for government comms, I would imagine. What have they got to say?
Fastamai, yes, indeed. So the Department for Enterprise says, alongside all parts of the Isle of Man government, it is committed to maintaining a robust stance against transnational, financial and organised crime. This, it says, reflects the agreed policy of the Council of Ministers. It says this includes alignment to and promotion of the national risk appetite, which is formed by credible international and domestic sources. The department tells Manx Radio it is committed to supporting legitimate iGaming operators and maintaining the island's international reputation as a trusted and respected jurisdiction is of the utmost importance. Ensuring a full understanding of emerging risk and setting out an agreed national risk appetite are key factors in maintaining such a reputation and protecting the island's economy and community from crime in all forms, it says. And finally, it tells us that the Isle of Man government is actively listening to the feedback at both political and officer level and continues to work collaboratively with all stakeholders to support the e-gaming sector's significant contribution to a, quote, vibrant and sustainable economy.
Lewis, thank you very much for that.
You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
Approaching 5:15, we'll do the travel in just a moment, but the pedestrianisation of Castletown's Market Square has been a contentious issue with residents for the last few years, to say the least. However, the new commissioners, who were elected in April, launched a 6-week public consultation to see what people really wanted from the area. Local Democracy reporter Emma Draper's been looking through the document and the proposals. First of all, Emma, are there any big changes to the current closure scheme?
Yes, there are a couple of big changes. So the commissioners are now looking to close the square to vehicles for the Easter holidays. The local authority is proposing that this would be from the Thursday before Good Friday until the Tuesday after Easter Monday. In the document, it says it gave careful consideration to the views which are received and want to use the square to its best ability. Another big change will be an increase to the amount of time people can park in the square whilst it's open to vehicles. It will rise to a full hour from Monday to Saturday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m.
Okay. What about minor changes? Is anything staying the same as from the previous arrangement?
So there are some small changes to the current arrangements. The summer closure has been moved around and will now start on the 1st of May and run until the 1st of October. Apart from when either day is a Sunday, then it moves to the next available weekday. Also, disc parking for those with a blue badge will remain at 2 hours in the square, and the spaces will now be available 24 hours a day, which is an increase from the 8 hours a day it used to be. Emergency service vehicles will also be allowed 24/7 permanent access to the square during times when it's closed to vehicles.
Okay. What can you tell us about the background of this consultation? How long has this been a debate for?
So a decision was made by the previous board to test pedestrianising it for a summer season, which was generally well received by people. However, it was then decided to permanently close it to vehicles, which was seen as controversial, and a number of local businesses spoke against the decision. They raised concerns about a lack of support from the previous commissioners, as well as putting off people from visiting the shops. A public meeting was held about the issue, where the majority of people in attendance were in favour of a summer closure, but not all year round.
Okay. Just finally, how many responses were received, and when are the commissioners hoping to have this sorted by?
So the local authority says it received 35 written submissions, as well as verbal comments from residents in the area, all of which they said were wide-ranging and taken into account. It says they are conscious there are strong views about the future of the square and what its intended use should be, and it adds that it hopes to have the majority of the proposals in place by next Easter.
Local Democracy reporter Emma Draper there, thanks so much.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside Tyres and Service Centre.
Well, let's take a look at the travel. In Onchan, Blackberry Lane is currently closed from Governor Road down to Summerhill for emergency gas repairs, and traffic can't turn from Summerhill into Blackberry Lane at the moment. Meanwhile, in Peel, temporary lights on the promenade near Crown Street, 24 hours a day for sewer work. And over in Sulby, temporary lights on Sulby Bridge, also 24 hours a day for sewer work. And between St Jude's and Andrus, there are rolling closures on the Andrus Road for water main replacement work. Take a quick trip down to the steam packet. Everything's looking good there. We'll have a look on the airport. On the arrivals board, the only thing I'm seeing is the 450 Aer Lingus from Dublin, not due to be in until 5:50. And on the departures board, similarly, the 520 Aer Lingus back to Dublin, not expected on the runway until at least 6:15.
Quayside Tyres and Service Centre, with 1 year's free engine warranty from Castrol. Get more with Quayside. You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
Now, three men from Nottingham have been jailed for their part in a plot to bring cocaine with an estimated street value of £99,000 to the Isle of Man, concealed in a mini fridge. Sean Cowper has the details on this.
BBC Isle of Man reports that 61-year-old Mark Thone pleaded guilty to being concerned in importing cocaine, while 59-year-old Adrian Larcombe and 37-year-old John Laird were convicted of the same charge after a trial at Douglas Courthouse. The court heard how Thone and Larcombe went to a retail park to buy the fridge before Thone stashed the drugs inside. Laird then drove them to a depot in Lancashire to drop the package off. Thone was jailed for 9 years and 10 months, Larcombe received 14 years and 6 months, and Laird was jailed for 12 years and 6 months. The court heard there had been regular telephone contact between Thone and Larcombe, as well as Larcombe and Laird in the lead-up to and after the date. The package was flagged as suspicious and then intercepted by police when it arrived on the island, and the three men were arrested on the 15th of November 2024. Thone of West Bridgford had pleaded guilty, but Larkham of Netherfield and Laird of Lakeside View denied it. Deemster Graham Cook said that while Laird had played a lesser role in the plot, both Larkham and Thone played a significant role in importing the drugs. The operation was not sophisticated, the Deemster said. Thone's defence said he had become involved to pay off a significant debt arising from previous convictions. Larkham's defence was that although his fingerprints were on the fridge, he claimed he didn't know about the drugs. Laird said he'd driven his own vehicle, registered in his own name, and had played a lesser role. An exclusion order has been placed on all three men, banning them from entering the island for 5 years once they're released from prison. Peter Nulty, who arranged the delivery from the island, and Rosemary Burgess, whose Laxey home the package was addressed to, were sentenced in February 2024.
Sean Cowper there with that report. Now, in Timwald next month, Douglas North MHK John Wannenberg will ask the court to ensure all UK supermarkets operating on the island procure, supply and promote Isle of Man produce. And that follows a petition organised by the Manx National Farmers Union, which garnered more than 1,800 signatures and revealed only 6% of local produce is actually sold on the island. Mr. Wannenberg has been telling Manx Radio why he wanted to raise the issue on the political stage.
I think recently the DEFA minister announced that only 6% of the food sold in our retail outlets is produced locally. And I think that's hugely important, that that needs to increase. You know, being an island, we must become more sustainable than what we currently are. It's really important that we, you know, produce and consume our own food on our own island as far as we can without compromising supply chain networks that are already established.
John, how confident are you that government departments and services could shift towards consistently sourcing local foods?
Well, I think we're well placed to do that. We're obviously a big purchaser, a big consumer. It just needs the political will. To be honest with you, I think it is there. I think everybody wants to use more local produce. It's just how we do it. And without compromising local suppliers as well. You know, if they've got their own irons in the fire already, we don't want to take anything away from them, but we just need to make it a more efficient and effective way of using or of being more sustainable, I think.
John, what would you say to critics who may argue this places new burdens on retailers or may increase costs for consumers?
I think if the consumer has more of a choice, then that's a good thing. That they needn't buy what they don't want to buy, but they can't buy it if it's not made available to them. And the local suppliers will meet the demand depending if it's there, and it's not going to be there if the products aren't supplied at point of sale. So it's a bit of a vicious circle. But something has to be done to improve the situation as it currently is.
Douglas North MHK, John Wannenberg there speaking with Chanel Suku. Right, we'll take a look at sports up next.
Get the full story. Tune in to Manx Radio's newscast for in-depth interviews behind the headlines. Find the newscast now at manxradio.com or your usual podcast provider.
Now, after a first-round knockout win, her previous fight in September, Isle of Man boxer Jade Burden returns to the ring this weekend. The Grenade will face the former Commonwealth and English title contender Lindsay Bushinsky at Winter Gardens in Blackpool tomorrow night and is eager to impress and against a challenging opponent.
It's been a bit of a challenging 2025, but I want to move on now. So I feel like, you know, once I get past Lindsay this weekend, like that just sets me up for next year for bigger and better things. And it's the experience, which is what I want.
How have the last few weeks been getting ready for this one?
Yeah, it's been great. So I train, for those that don't know, I train in Liverpool at No Limits Gym, where Jamie Devine's based out of. Meatball Molly from the UFC is there now, as she's turned over. So the experience that I get from just having her around, you know, doing rounds with her, she's so experienced and I've learned loads from her. But I've had the whole year basically just to go back to basics and kind of adapt to the pro style a little bit more. So I think that's obviously done me the world of good, hence the first round knockout and the last one.
Are you looking for maybe something as explosive as last time, or are you preparing for all possibilities?
Do you know, like, going back to the last one, all I was told from my coach was just to be relaxed and be patient, and that's exactly what I did. And okay, the knockout came in the first round, but that was just from being relaxed, being happy in there and just enjoying it. So I don't really think about too much about her. I just kind of worry. Well, I don't even worry. I just think about what I've got to do. And I know that if I stick to my game plan, like, I know I'll be successful on the night.
If, as you're hoping, you're successful this weekend, what do you think that will hopefully open up going into, obviously not just the end of this year, but maybe going into 2026?
I've already heard from, you know, my manager and stuff, it's probably titles next. So whether it's a central area title or like a silver comp, Commonwealth or just, you know, an English title. But that's what I need to stay motivated. I need to be chasing those big fights because you want to be not frightened, but you want to push yourself as much as you can. And you want these challenges because the more you push, the more you challenge, the more you can get the experience and you become a better fighter. So I want to be mixing it with the best that's out there, really.
Lindsay Bashinsky speaking with Rob Pritchard there. We can now join Rob Pritchard live in the studio for the latest sport. Fast to my Rob.
I think you mean Jay Burden there, Christian. I mean, Lindsay's on the other side of the water at the moment, but I see where you're coming from. Okay, first of all, looking ahead to this weekend, one more spot in this year's Manx Carstall Railway Cup competition remains mathematically up for grabs going into this weekend's clashes. With Corinthians, Peel and Onchan having already secured places in the tournament, two sides, Laxey and St John's United, are both still in with a shot of taking the fourth and final slot. Well, during Saturday's ties, fourth place Laxey hold the upper hand, knowing they would only have to avoid defeat at Union Mills tomorrow to claim their place, while St John's United would have to win their next two and hope Laxey suffer back-to-back defeats as well as a big swing on goal difference. Well, you can view a full schedule of all this weekend's Isle of Man football fixtures at manxradio.com. Elsewhere in football, FC Isle of Man will be looking to make it back-to-back wins for the first time this season when they head to Prestwich Hayes in the NWCFL Premier Division this weekend. The Manx side will head to Aidey Moran Park tomorrow, knowing a win on their travels could see them realistically climb a further two places up the table if results elsewhere also go their way. They'll take on a Prestwich Hayes side which has only tasted defeat once in its last four matches in all competitions, and after hitting five past Longridge Town on their travel 6 days ago, FC Isle of Man will start the weekend 8 points clear of the relegation zone. In rugby, a highly anticipated Manx derby in the English leagues headlines this weekend's ties. Ramsey hosts Vagabonds at Morag Park this Saturday at 1:30 p.m. with both looking to get vital points on the board and the former still searching for their first league win of the campaign. Elsewhere at the same time, Douglas hosts Widnes in Regional 2 Northwest at Portishead, with Douglas starting the weekend just 3 points behind leaders Sandbach. And in hockey, four teams remaining with a chance of winning the Mixed Division 1 League title going into the final weekend of the 2025 Mixed League season. Backers C, Valkyries B, Ramsey A and Harlequins B all remain in contention heading into Saturday's ties. And you can find full details of tomorrow's hockey fixtures on our website.
Gurumai, thank you very much. Rob, I tell you what, I was so proud of myself saying her name right that I just got too carried away. I mean, you can't blame me, right?
I've got lost in the moment there.
Well, that is it for Update this evening. Thanks very much to newsreader Siobhan Fletcher. Rob is up next with you for Friday's Sport Preview. Chris Kinley has greatest hits from 6:30. Howard Kane with Sweet and Swing a little bit later on as well. And then, of course, Rhian Evans is taking you through until tomorrow with After Hours. Beth will be back with you from Monday. So until next time, take care. Bye-bye for now.